Our study tonight finishes up the book of Micah. Micah chapter 7, verses 11 to 20, God's fulfilled messianic blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. Micah, who was a Judean from Moresheth in the southwestern part of Palestine, preached to the common people of Judah. The message of Micah's prophecy was that God's coming judgment for Judah's sin would be unavoidable and severe. But in the end, his Abrahamic covenant would be honored and Israel would be blessed. Micah 7, 11 to 20 concludes with an encouraging prophecy of God's fulfillment of his ancient Genesis 12, 1 to 3 Abrahamic covenant involving the Messianic kingdom. So we view the passage for our insight and application. I want to read the verses and then we'll look at them. Micah 7, 11 to 20. In the day that thy walls are to be built, in that day shall the decree be far removed. In that day also he shall come even to thee from Assyria, from the fortified cities, from the fortress even to the Euphrates River, from sea to sea and from mountain to mountain. Notwithstanding, the land shall be desolate because of them that dwell therein for the fruit of their doings. Shepherd thy people with thy rod, the flock of thine heritage, which dwelleth solitarily in the woods in the midst of Carmel. Let them feed in Bashan and Gilead as in the days of antiquity. According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt, I will show unto him marvelous things. The nation shall see and be confounded at all their might. They shall lay their hand upon their mouth. Their ears shall be deaf. They shall lick the dust like a serpent. They shall move out of their holes like worms of the earth. They shall be afraid of the Lord our God and shall revere or fear because of thee. Who is a God like unto thee, who pardoneth iniquity and passeth by the transgression of the remnant of his heritage? He retaineth not his anger forever because he delighteth in mercy. He will turn again. He will have compassion upon us. He will subdue our iniquities, and thou wilt cast all of their sins into the depths of the sea. Thou wilt perform the truth to Jacob, and the mercy to Abraham, which thou hast sworn unto our fathers from the days of old. One of the main passages why I'm not an amillennialist. Anyway, we'll get into this. God led Micah to prepare encouraging times, to predict rather, encouraging times for Israel in her coming messianic kingdom. The messianic kingdom would be a time of building walls and extending boundaries. Now, this would not be a time of war when the people would build city walls. For the word walls here translates the Hebrew noun gader. And gader is a wall around a vineyard. That's a rock wall that you build up around a vineyard. So it would be an era of peace and bounty when the boundaries of the vineyards would be extended far out due to their great production. See, normally you would have the vineyard and you'd have, you know, the wall there, but the vineyards would be so productive, they said, man, we're going to have to raise more of this. So they would knock out part of the wall and extend it way out. And it's going to be great. In fact, there's a passage, I forget what Old Testament prophet it is, one of the minor prophets, that says the grapes will be so abundant that someone will tie a donkey to the grapevine. And the donkey, of course, he's going to eat on the grapes. But no one's going to think anything of it because there are going to be so many grapes. So that's going to be some time. Anyway, lands like Assyria and Egypt, where Israel's foes had dwelt, will be inhabited by people who would travel to Jerusalem to learn from the Lord and to worship him. Indeed, people around the world, from sea to sea and mountain to mountain, would come. As they traveled, they would cross lands made desolate in God's judgment for sin, and that would be in the previous tribulation period. So remember, the land is still being, you know, still recovering from the Great Tribulation. When my mother and father first sailed to Africa in 1948, they went from New York City to Liverpool, England, and Liverpool, England was still pretty much bombed out. You could see all over the place where it's bombed out. And the British at the time were really looking for American dollars. So if you had a buck on you, you could buy a lot. So they would get offshore and buy that. But that changed dramatically in a couple of years because of the Marshall Plan, where the United States is loaning money out and was rebuilding Europe. But Britain was still pretty much bombed out because of that. Well, that's going to be like it is at the beginning of the Millennial Kingdom. There's still going to be a lot of desecration that's going to have to be rebuilt up. Micah then called on the Lord to shepherd his people with his shepherd club. It's a club that is used in mustering or counting sheep, shebet. That God's inheritance, his people, then isolated like a sheep in a forest, would enjoy prosperity and peace as they had in Bashan and in Gilead, as in former days. You don't normally take sheep into a forest. Sheep need to be out grazing where it's open and they have grasslands. And the grasslands were in Bashan and Gilead. That's on the eastern side there, or they're called the Transjordan. Bashan and Gilead, east of the Jordan, were fertile grazing grounds for sheep and cattle. So Micah called on God to shepherd his people who had suffered and been scattered, returning them to their land to live in peace and in abundance. Well, in response to Micah's request, God predicted that as in the days of old, when he had performed marvels to bring Israel up out of the land of Egypt during the Exodus, he would perform marvels once again to gather them from the lands of the world and return them to Israel for the Messianic kingdom. Incidentally, this hasn't been fulfilled. We haven't had Israel gathered under miracles that occurred like in the Exodus. So this is why we believe this is yet future. In response, the Gentile nations that had troubled Israel would behold this demonstration of God's might in Israel's behalf, and they would be ashamed since God's power was far greater than their might. They would be speechless and will refuse to hear about Israel's victories. In humiliation, they will lick the dust like snakes and like animals coming out of their hiding places. They will surrender to the Lord and will be fearful of Israel. These are pictures, figurative pictures of the great humility. The nations will be downcast. There was a time when the Gentiles were lording it over the Jewish people, but the day is going to come. The tide has switched. Israel will be on top. Israel will be the world dominant nation, and the Gentiles will be cowering. So that's going to be interesting. This turn of Israel's fortunes would have been great encouragement for the godly remnant in Micah's time. Well, in response to this revelation, Micah praised the Lord for his uniqueness and goodness as God. Micah's question, who is like you? Who is a God like you? In Hebrew is Mi'el Kamulka. It may be a word play on Micah's own name, Mikah. So instead of Mi'el Kamulka, it's Mikah, which means who is like Yahweh. The answer to this question, no one is like the Lord. And then he described God. In fact, we have a phrase in one of our hymns, who is a pardoning God like thee? Or who has grace so rich and free? I think it was a song by one of the Wesleys, Charles Wesley, John Wesley, I forget which one was the songwriter. But anyway, the answer to this question is no one is like the Lord. And then he described the Lord. Six descriptions. God pardons the sins and the transgressions of the remnant of his inheritance, unlike pagan gods. See, pagan gods were very fickle. If you didn't do what they liked, they would just whip you. They were just mean. They came down. Israel's God is very, very different. He was a gracious God who loved to pardon. That's unique in the ancient Near East. A God who would forgive. A God who was gentle and was compassionate. It's very, very unusual for God to be like that. Then God does not stay angry forever with his people, Micah 7:18. That, again, is also very much unlike the pagan gods. Pagan gods are very fickle, and they could bear a grudge. They could bear a grudge against each other because the gods would always often fight amongst themselves. This is why when Jesus said, I and my Father are one, he was presenting something that was brand new. You got two different figures in the Godhead, but they were in complete unanimity. They thought the same. They expressed they had the same attitudes, very unlike the pagan gods that were around Israel. And then, the Lord does not stay angry forever because he delights in chesed. Chesed is the word that we translate loyal love. You'll often find it in the King James Version as of loving kindness. But it's not just love. It's love with faithfulness. It's a loyal love. God is extremely loyal and is also extremely loving. Combination. That's as close as we have to the word grace. Then God once again will express his rehem. Rehem is a different word. It's related to hesed, but it actually means tender, heartfelt concern for Israel. This is the gentleness of God, where he comes in. He's very, very gentle. Then the Lord will deal with Israel's sins by treading them underfoot. Notice you stomp on them underfoot. And then casting them into the depths of the sea would be the Mediterranean Sea, so that they no longer function even as a potential threat to Israel's relationship with God. In other words, God's going to get rid of those sins. He's going to pound them, and then he's going to take them and throw them way into the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea, so out of sight, out of mind. And that's a wonderful thing. God is a forgiving God. He completely forgets. A lot of times we don't forgive ourselves. And we bring up a sin in our mind and we feel guilty over it, and then God comes to us and says, what sin? What are we talking about here? I forgave you. It's done. Put a period. Move on. I have. So that's a wonderful thing about God. Micah knew God would do these things because of his faithfulness to Jacob, wow, and his loyal love, his chesed to Abraham, fulfilling his promises to Abraham and to Israel's forefather Jacob, but is rooted in the ancient Abrahamic covenant of Genesis 12, 1-3. This is one of the main reasons why I am a premillennialist and not someone who believes in Reconstructionism or in amillennialism. It is true that the church often is identified with Abraham because Abraham is the father of everybody who believes. But the church is never, ever in the scripture identified with Jacob. Now Jacob, God promised to Jacob an extension of the promises that he gave to Abraham. But here in this passage, he's talking about both Abraham and Jacob. This is the promise of God to Israel. The literal fulfillment of Genesis chapter 12, 1, 2, and 3. So it's a wonderful thing. God's going to keep his promise. As in the ancient, notice the reference to the ancient covenant with Abraham and with Jacob, basically things the fathers from days of antiquity, days of old. God has a long memory, doesn't forget. And he made a promise, he's going to keep it. That's a wonderful thing. So, due to his great grace, God will remarkably, literally fulfill his ancient Abrahamic covenant for Israel. So may we glory in God's great faithfulness and his grace, his loyal love, and live in hope of our glorious future with the Lord. In liberal theology, they often present the God of the Old Testament as a God who is mean and warlike. The God of the New Testament is a forgiving and gentle and loving God. It's interesting that in the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews, it says, our God is a consuming fire. That's the New Testament God. He's also gracious, but he's also a consuming fire. The Old Testament God also is a consuming fire on Mount Sinai, but also in passages like this, and we hear it over and over again, God is very gracious. Same God. He hasn't had a personality change from the Old to the New Testament. Same God. Same Lord that we're dealing with. So when we read these passages in the Minor Prophets about the characteristics of God, we're talking about the same God that we have, and is a wonderful God. He loves to pardon. He loves to forgive. He's very long-suffering. He never forgets his people, never forgets his promises to his people. He can be trusted. So that gives us stability. So may we be stable in a world that is unstable, to say the least, as we rely on this promise-fulfilling God.